Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
The Killer Bees!
ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 proudly present The Killer Bees.
Definitely a fan of the Killer Bees.
Don't sweat the technique.
Now from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, bringing you the fastest 3 hours in Houston sports radio, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Ooh, what a breakdown! Hey, how we doing? It's a Friday edition of the Killer Bees, and Brian's here, and I'm here, and, well, you don't get the usual, he's Blank, I'm Branham, that's Brian behind the glass, because we don't know where Jeremy is.
Is that your Jeremy impression?
He's MIA. He's pulling a Patrick Creighton. He's stuck in traffic.
Yeah, see, I don't know how you feel about stuck in traffic excuses, because you can obviously get stuck in traffic. Unless you're leaving it to the last minute, then traffic shouldn't be a problem.
Which is a Patrick Creighton. No offense,
yeah,
Patrick,
like,
Creighton,
we
love
we,
you, but yeah, you used to do that. You used to cut it close.
We used to work here with a guy, Brad Keltner, who
BK.
would show, and I love Brad Keltner, but he would show up literally 1 minute before air. Which, look, if traffic's perfect, then you're fine. But the thing that always drives me crazy about people who do that, not saying that Jeremy necessarily did that, maybe there's just a traffic situation beyond his control. But most
well,
likely,
I mean, he meditates here, so at least, well, he does leave a little window.
Sure, but most likely it's a situation where it takes me 10 minutes, so I'm going to leave 15 minutes beforehand, and then you hit traffic, and because you only left yourself 5 minutes, now you're late.
You see, my dad was late for everything, so it's like been a pet peeve of mine my whole life that I want to be early and on time. And so my daughters already know, like, Lisa's the exact opposite. Lisa doesn't care if she's late, and she'll cut it close every single time. And
yeah,
I'm like,
same with my wife.
Yeah, no, huh? We aren't doing that. So I'm always like trying to give myself an extra 10, 15 minute pad for the exact reasons you gave. But look, there are plenty of folks that just believe that they can make it or they can fake it.
They just seem to assume that, okay, well, it only takes me 10 minutes to get there, so I'll leave 15 minutes before. Like, well, things can happen. Give yourself a few extra minutes. Like, there's going to be a wreck one day. Maybe there's construction you don't know about. Maybe there's, rubberneckers looking at a cop pulling someone over. There could be 1,000 reasons why the traffic is a few minutes slower, and because you only left yourself 5 minutes, now you're late.
Yeah, and then the
Again,
other thing
not saying
is,
Jeremy necessarily did that, but he might have.
You cannot do – he won't be doing the walk of shame because he's doing the show remotely today.
Yeah, we think so.
No, I confirmed it.
Oh, you did confirm
it?
Yeah, because
you and I were both, like, up in the air. We weren't sure.
Oh, I see. I just saw his response. Okay, yes.
So then I texted to make sure. So he is remote. We don't know if he's remote in Houston getting ready for a travel party excursion to Baylor or if he's already in Waco. I don't know.
He's already be in Waco, right? Like, what would be the advantage? The game's tomorrow night, right?
Right.
If you're waiting till after the show, are you really saving that much time driving from Spring as from driving from here? I mean, yeah. I mean, technically a little bit, but is it really worth doing?
So there's just so many details, right? We don't know if he's traveling with the team, or a lot of times he'll do the show.
I imagine he's driving on his own.
And then he'll drive on his own. But it's a night game tomorrow night in Waco.
Yeah, you could almost drive tomorrow.
So you could leave tomorrow.
Yeah.
So that's why I don't know if he's here, but if he, but then he wouldn't
here.
Be. But if he was here, he wouldn't do the show remotely. I wouldn't think.
Well, right, because so if he's here, then he's probably doing the like if he's trying to save himself time on the drive, right? He's probably at his home doing the show from home, and then driving from home directly to Waco.
So here's the other prerequisite that we're not thinking about. Maybe there's a baseball game tonight. So maybe he's calling the baseball game tonight. So he's at U of H, and he's going to do baseball before he goes and does basketball tomorrow. So there's a lot of balls in the air with Jeremy Branham right now.
Yeah, that could be it. Like I would just like if the situation. Obviously, we're wildly speculating because what else we're going to do now?
It's fun.
And actually, apparently, he's ready, but he says he wants to wait for segment two. So maybe we should continue wildly speculating.
Sure. I mean, Alex says he's taking Tillman's jet.
It's then he wouldn't have to deal with traffic.
It's a good point.
Because, but getting back to the wild speculation, like if he is in Waco, and again, we'll find out here in a few minutes, but if he is in Waco, I can't imagine. I've been to Waco a few times. I'm sure you've been to Waco a few times. I don't know what terrible traffic would be in Waco to prevent to make you late on the way to wherever you're doing the show from.
But you're making the assumption he's there already.
I know, based off that assumption, if he is indeed in Waco. I don't see Waco, or at least my experience with Waco, is not crippling traffic to the point of making you late.
See, I just kind of feel like he's still in town. Because Houston traffic's always bad. So the chances are greater that there's something going on in Houston that's either preventing him from getting to U of H to get to the remote location in the press box to do the show with
us. Probably is the most logical answer, that he's doing the show from the UH press box. I think your explanation of baseball game tonight makes the most sense. Yeah. That's why he's remote today.
Because he's a jack of all trades.
Yeah, because he told us he's remote, but he didn't tell us if it was baseball or basketball related. There's always usually as few amount of details as possible in those texts we
Correct.
Get. Yeah, the minimal amount of detail we could possibly get and get by with.
Yes, it's a don't ask, don't tell, but here's what we're doing. That's exactly what it is. He is full don't ask, don't tell, but oh, by the way, this is what
I will be remote Monday.
Yeah, this is what
I will be remote
like.
Friday. There's no other context added usually to those texts.
Yeah, yeah, and any other questions can be referred to the communications department of Jeremy Branham, Inc., but he ain't coming forward.
I thought you were going to say the communications department of Joe George.
No, I don't. I think sometimes Joe George is kind of playing the same game we are.
Yeah, that's true.
But Joe George likes to play a lot of games. So there you go. Speaking of games, there was a game last night between the Rockets and the New Orleans Pelicans, Brian.
Yeah, so you feel better? They got to win.
I don't feel better at all. And
I was setting you up for that.
Well, and honestly, I want to go back to the conversation we had a few weeks ago when I was getting absolutely annihilated by people because I said they weren't contenders. I'm curious today, right? I understand you lost to OKC. You lost to Indiana. You got a win last night against a very hapless New Orleans Pelicans team. But what are you feeling right now about your Rockets? We don't even have to go contender pretender. Is this team capable of winning a playoff series? Is this team capable of being a six seed or higher and staying out of the play-in? Because the team that I'm seeing now, as opposed to the team I saw before the All-Star break, is literally night and day. And it starts with a guy that we've had a lot of serious conversations on, Brian.
Yeah.
It starts with Jalen Green. As much as Jeremy was getting back to all in on Jalen Green, and we were wondering, is this another heater, or is this a guy that is going to be the guy going forward? I think you and I were kind of clearly on the side of we need more games.
We need to see him be more consistent over a longer period of time. Yeah, he had the Draymond Green triple single last night. And again, I think I said this when we had the conversation a couple weeks ago. You can usually just look at one line in the box score and know how Jalen did that night. And that's how he shot from three. Mm-hmm. Because if the three-point shot's not falling, unfortunately, whether it be just the way he decides to play the game or lack of skill or whatever you want to attribute it to, there's a thousand different things you could attribute to. But whatever reason, like if the three's not falling, the rest of the game doesn't come behind it on the offensive side. And, I mean, 2-for-7 last night, the triple single, shot poorly overall. And I don't know. I know when we had this conversation, Jeremy was looking back over the last 82 games, which is totally fair. I mean, obviously, that's a full season's mm-hmm. worth of games. But when you look inside that, and this is the conversation or the side of the conversation you and I took when it happened, is even inside that, you look at, okay, 8-game straight, great. Next 9 games, terrible. Next 3 games, great. Next 4 games, terrible. Like, I know this overall adds up to over an 82-game period, a line that is pretty good. Not great, not elite, but pretty good. But when you look at the game-by-game, the ebbs and flows, how wildly he fluctuates, especially with the shooting, it just paints a picture of someone who's too inconsistent to ever be viewed as the guy.
Look, to me, Jalen is a microcosm of the team. And because of he's such an integral part of what makes this team good, when he's bad, and a lot of times they're bad. And as much as I was adamant about this team not being a contender, and Barry came at me and lots of listeners, including XX Ron and others, came at me, and I was there for all of it because I said, look, we're not going to know until the end of the season. What I'm seeing right now, just like out of Jalen Green, is also what I'm seeing out of the team, because sometimes their defense is good. Sometimes their rebounding is good. But when it is, sometimes there's a lot of things that aren't good. You look at it again last night as a team. They're still missing free throws. They're missing 50% of their free throws. That's not going to get it done, people. When they get to the playoffs and every single point matters more, if you're missing free throws, you're missing opportunities, and you're probably leaving the door open for the other team to take advantage. They needed a wake-up call. They were losing against one of the worst teams in the league at halftime. They looked uninspired again.
Until the third quarter.
I was going to say, they went into halftime, they probably got their asses chewed out. And some kind of a switch was flipped, and they dominated the third quarter, and they got to where they needed to go so that they get home the rest of the way. But the mistakes are still there. The missed free throws are a problem. They're going, oh, the big lineup. Now, that could be a problem. Do you really think that Steven Adams is going to be on the floor that much in the playoffs, and you don't think that teams are going to be able to game plan and go, we can attack Steven Adams? Yeah, when you weren't expecting it, it could be effective in a couple of games here and there. But the big lineup ain't going to be here to stay for long stretches and save your bacon if you're the Rockets.
Yeah, it's nice as a changeup, like you said, right, to catch people off guard. But I would imagine if teams have time to plan for it, they can get guys on Steven Adams defensively where he has to go out and guard on the perimeter, and that would be obviously a problem that they couldn't handle. And obviously it's not your best offensive lineup either because he's not a high-scoring big. I think it just... I mean, the ebbs and flows, specifically with Jalen Green as a team overall. You mentioned free throw shooting and defensive performance, but it just points to the obvious, a young team still learning how to win. And for that reason, I'm firmly now in the spot of they make the playoffs. I think they still make a top six seed. They don't have to get to the play-in, although it's getting more precarious as we go down the stretch. But I don't think this is a team that wins a playoff series. And I was on that side when they were up at the two seed and staring, you know, looking down on everybody but the Thunder. I did think they would find a way to win a playoff series against most teams in the first round. But having seen this post-All-Star stretch, and really even before the All-Star break, but for all the reasons you mentioned, this seems like a young team still learning to win that I don't think wins a playoff series.
No, and I think that's what I was saying. Look, I said it then, I'll say it now, and I've been adamant to stick with it. And that is the fact that we are going – I don't believe they're contenders this year. I didn't think that they were going to win a playoff series this year against most of the teams when you referenced that. And I want to know where you guys are at right now. Is this team going to win a playoff series? Is this team going to be a top four seed, a top six seed? Are they contenders? Are they pretenders? Let us know what you think. 713-780-3776. You can call the show. You can text the show. You can hit us on Twitter. You can hit us on Twitch. We're going to be here for the rest of the next almost 3 hours. Jeremy's going to join us next. We'll get into more of this, including the Jalen Green conversation. But join us, be a part of the program. Let's talk some Rockets as we get the program underway. On a Friday, a busy show, lots more to come from. It's the Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 FM.
ESPN 97.5.
Found the Killer Bees, live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios. Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
He's Blank, I'm Branham. It is the Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5. I'm a little surprised to hear y'all bang on Jalen Green, to be honest with you.
I'm not. Why? I
think he was being sarcastic.
Yeah. No, I don't think he played poorly yesterday.
You don't?
No, I don't. He didn't miss a ton of shots. He wasn't a great shooter yesterday, but he kind of had the presence of mind, like, hey, the shot's not falling. Like, I better not shoot the ball. So he stopped, and he had 8 assists yesterday. That might be, like, close to a season high. Like, he was getting other guys involved, which I think is one of the weaknesses of his game, is that I think he struggles to get other guys involved. I felt differently yesterday about Jalen. I thought Jalen played one of his better – I don't want to say it was one of his better games because he didn't shoot it well. But I like the presence of mind. My shot's off. I'm not going to jack up 25 shots. Let me get other guys involved. I thought he was a team player yesterday.
I mean, I guess that's one way to look at it. I look at it as a guy that you're relying on, that you kind of put a lot of your fate as a team in on a night-by-night basis. And, yes, maybe he handled his ill shooting a little differently than he has in the past. But overall, when I look at it, I expect more from him on a nightly basis, and this is two straight games where he hasn't been great. So I look at it differently. We talked about, like, is this finally the time where he gets over the hump and he avoids those lulls and he can, you know, he kind of, the trajectory goes, you know, continues to go way up. That's why the jury's still out for me, because I still think that there's so much more there that we're not seeing consistently enough.
Yeah, I don't look at scoring as the only way to...
I'm not saying it is.
Like, great a player. If he was 3 for 20 yesterday, like 1 for 10 and like 1 assist and 8 turnovers, like, okay, that's a dreadful game. But I like that he impacted winning in other ways. Like, was the offense the reason they like you said they didn't play well, which I don't disagree with. The first half was awful.
Mm-hmm.
Second half defensively, they kind of, you know, locked in and held New Orleans to 38 points. Like the game that Trey Murphy had in the first half was insane. Like what's going on here? Trey Murphy should not be popping off for 20 plus first half points against you. I like his game, but he shouldn't be popping off for 20 plus first half points against you. That was embarrassing. But I think they got locked into the lock. Like, they got 38 points in the second half. Like, that's a good effort. Pelicans aren't good, so I'm not going to sit here and be like, yes, the Rockets are back. I'm not saying that. I think it was a step in the right direction in the second half. But of all the games that Jalen Green has had, I'm not really bashing his performance yesterday. 8 assists, 2 turnovers, had a couple of rebounds. You know, didn't shoot it well. There's no doubt about that. Didn't shoot it well, but he wasn't making like poor decisions, I didn't think. I thought his shots were good shots. Didn't score well, didn't shoot it well, but I don't think he played bad.
Yeah, look, and a lot of times we look at his 3-point shooting and the 2 for 7 from 3 too. It's just,
yeah, he didn't shoot it well.
Right.
But did he play poorly because he didn't shoot it well?
Overall is, if you want to compliment him when he has the big nights, then you look at it. Yeah, the 8 assists is, and look, the thing that I think is better, almost better than that, although I like the 8 assists the best, is the fact that he only had 2 turnovers. Because a lot of times when he's really trying to kind of force the action, if his shot isn't falling early, a lot of times he forces it to the point where he turns the ball over. So that didn't happen last night. So you can find, look, I'll appreciate the fact that you're finding the silver lining in the night that he had.
No, it's not a silver lining. It's my opinion of how he played.
Right, great. Then it's your opinion of how he played and my opinion of how he plays too.
I'm not trying to talk you into it.
No, right.
I'm not saying that you're wrong. We're just having a conversation.
Yeah, I just look at it from the standpoint of, like I said, I think if this team's going anywhere, you expect so much more of Jalen Green. Credit to him for not trying to force too much and do too much to create a lot more havoc on his line score from the shooting perspective. And the 8 assists is impressive to me. But overall, I just expect so much more from him. And, look, I think I've been led to believe that when he's got on this last heater again, where you, like, you know there's so much more there. And now back-to-back games, it hasn't been great. So I hope he finds it tomorrow night against New Orleans, and I hope that they kind of right the ship on this 6-game homestand. But the brand of basketball that this entire team is playing since the 2 games prior to the All-Star break has not been great. And now I think they'll still solidify a top 6 seed, but I thought that they would solidify a top 4 seed.
Okay, but specifically about Jalen, yeah. Like, you're like, guys are going to have off shooting nights like that. We know that, like, it's going to happen. Just like in baseball, guys are going to go 0-for with 3 strikeouts, no matter how good they are. So, like, when you have a bad shooting night, what are you doing? Like, what are you doing to help the team win? Are you going to go 3-for-20 trying to shoot yourself out of it? Or are you going to drive to the basket, draw some defenders, and kick it out to the open guy and rack up some assists? Because I don't usually see Jalen Green do that. Like, I if you want to go back to the Pacers game, like the recency here, like, I think he had a very similar game against the Pacers that he did with the Pelicans, except he didn't get teammates involved. Like, he shot 4-for-13 in that game. That's pretty similar to 3-for-10. He was 2-for-7 from 3 against the Pacers. The same numbers he was against the Pelicans from behind the 3-point line. But in that game, he had 2 assists, 5 turnovers. Mm-hmm. Like, that cannot happen. Like, I can live with a bad shooting night. Like, guys are going to have bad shooting nights, and then Jalen Green's probably going to have more bad shooting nights than more consistent shooters, because I don't think he's a consistent shooter, which might, you know, be the thing that hangs, like, prevents Jalen Green from taking that next step up, prevents Jalen Green from, you know, jumping to that next tier that he's, you know, aspiring for. But if you're having a bad shooting night, do you want the Pacers game where you're committing 5 turnovers and you're not getting your guys open looks and you're minus 22 in the box score? Or do you want him to have a high number of assists, low turnovers, and have a really good plus minus? Like, I can accept the bad shooting. That's going to happen.
Like, I hear your point, and I gave him credit for the fact that the assists were up, the turnovers were down, and he didn't just go on a shooting barrage anyway trying to find it. But I think it's like, to my point, it's because I know that the talent is there. I'm frustrated all the time because I think that there is another level that he can get to. And then we had the conversation about, like, is this the time where he finally kind of crosses that threshold and we never look back and now we see who he can truly be? Because the way I look at it differently than the way you look at it is, yes, you're right. The things that you're saying aren't wrong. I get it. But when I'm looking at him as being a leader of this team, as being some of the leaders when you look at teams in this league, You don't expect, and it's unfair to say LeBron James because he's one of the best to ever do it, but you look at your leaders and say, well, I expect them to score at a certain level, to lead to victory and do the things. And look, scoring is part of that. So now he's got back-to-back games where we were discussing him kind of never, you know, maybe finally never looking back and taking this thing and going with it. And now we've got back-to-back games where, like, okay, now I'm a little more leery because it's frustrating again because I'm scared of the fact that he might be regressing back to another lull as opposed to a guy that's finally getting it and ready to take this team to the next level.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's spotty from game to game. Like, I think he's proven that over his four-year career. Like, he's going to have moments where he's a 30% shooter. He's going to have moments where he's a 50% shooter. Like, that's his game. Like, and would we love for him to, like, always be a 50% shooter, always 40% from three? Of course we wish that. Like, of course we wish that Jalen Green could be that guy. Can he ever be that guy? Probably not. So if he's not that guy, what is he doing in the games where he's shooting 30% and he's shooting poorly? Is he kind of just sulking? Is he not playing defense? Is he not getting on the glass? Is he not getting his teammates involved? Is he now a total negative? And I think Jalen Green in the past has been that guy. I thought differently yesterday, and it made me encouraged about it. Because if you're going to stink as a shooter consistently, and he will because that's who he is, okay, well, go grab some boards. Play a little defense, which probably wasn't in the first half, but did in the second half. Go dish out some assists. Find some open looks for your teammates. So I was more encouraged by Jalen Green yesterday. I'm not saying he played like this MVP-level game, but for one of his poor shooting games, I thought he helped the team more than he would whenever he's shooting poorly other times. Now, the opinion of the overall team, like, I don't think they're playing good ball. It's kind of like they're kind of clinging to this finish, just kind of hoping that they can hang on to what's ever left. But, you know, they still have the potential to be a good defensive team. They're probably average offensively. And I did think the second half was a step in the right direction. Am I, like, over the moon about it? No, it's the Pelicans. And they play the Pelicans again. Like, I even if they win tonight by 30 and hold the Pelicans to 70 points, I'm not going to lose my mind because it's the Pelicans. But I was encouraged with the second half that hopefully he can start to change the momentum a little bit of what this team has been doing the last few games.
Yeah, look, I think from the standpoint of a wake-up call at halftime, they came out of and sometimes we hear about the message just doesn't get through anymore or the guys don't react the right way. The good news was, you know, Ime probably got up into them a little bit, and they came out ready to play focused basketball. And like you said, they played defense. They capitalized by turning the turnovers and the good defense into opportunities off the break to get better offense, and they buried a bad team. I don't know how many other teams they would have beat last night playing the way they played, uninspired in the first half, and some of the things that we've been talking about. That's my biggest concern. Like, I thought that they had kind of – they were on their way on the verge of another year where they were speeding up the clock. Like, after the 22 games gained Udoka's first year, I felt like this is one where I, admittedly, before the season, thought they were going to be in the play-in tournament. But I thought this was a team that could have sped up the clock and been a team that was a top four seed in the West. And now somewhere lying in the balance, I think they'll hang on to a top six seed because it's a three-game difference right now. But the way they're playing, I have serious concerns because the fact that they're not playing anywhere close to when they were playing the first half of the season prior to the All-Star break.
What are you trying to get out of the year, though?
Well, to me, I want as much experience as possible for a young team. I want them to get into a playoff series that's a long playoff series and understand the differences and feel the different kind of pressure and I also want to get kind of a clear understanding when this team plays its last game of this season as to what they need going forward and kind of a clearer understanding of who they have and what they need. Because right now we're still waiting for all these young guys to develop. We're still talking about, do they have the guys that are going to be the go-to guys on this team, or do they have to make a trade? And who do they need to find that can kind of take them to the next level? I think a lot of that could be more defined if they get into a first-round playoff series that lasts a while, so we can kind of see individuals, the team, and analyze, like, shortcomings.
Yeah, I see. I mostly agree. Like, this to me is still a learning season.
Mm-hmm.
Like, learning you're going to learn more if you get to the playoffs. You're going to learn more if you play, you know, as many playoff games as you can. You're going to learn more if you get, you know, further along into the playoffs in the first round. I think that they're going to accomplish that. I think they're going to accomplish a good learning block season. I still think that they'll make the playoffs. I don't see them getting out of the first round. Obviously, it depends on matchup a bit, you know, and who they face. Potentially, they get a good matchup and they can get to the second round. I don't like the way that they're playing recently, but I still feel very confident that this is going to be a very good learning block season for a very young team. So I don't want to say that everything else is kind of, you know, gravy the rest of the way, because I do want to see them play well, but everything the rest of the way is kind of gravy. Like, I feel like they've had a good learning block season already, and anything else that they accomplish from a learning point of view is just bonus for this year.
Yeah, I think, you know, the line in the sand is probably solidifying a playoff spot, a top six seed, so you know you're going to get at least one series. And then the veterans that have already been there, we don't need to see and know anything more about Van Vliet and Brooks and guys like that. We need to see the younger guys. We need to kind of get them to get the feeling of it and then understand what to do with it and how to deal with it going past it. Because I think that it would be a disappointment if they weren't a top six seed, but it's still, to me, kind of a disappointment with the way they got off to such a hot start and were a two seed for a majority of the first part of the season, top two, top three seed, to where I thought they should have home court advantage. But now it's like, look, I still think it's been a very, very good season because they didn't take a step back. And as much as I was hoping that they'd have sped up the clock, where they are is better than where I thought they'd be, so I'll take it.
So, like, if they finish, because I think I agree with you. Like, even if they're in the play-in, but they still qualify for the real playoffs, I'm still going to take that. Like, the only thing that would be a failure for me, and again, what I consider a learning block season, like, I didn't really change my expectations a whole lot on the year when they got off to the hot start. I had more confidence they would make the playoffs, but it didn't really change my expectation for the year. If they miss the final eight, if they miss that first round seven game series, that to me is a failure. Anything else for me, I'm pleased. Like, that's my line in the sand. That is how I'm defining the Houston Rockets 24-25 campaign.
Yeah, I gotta see them in a series. I gotta see them in a series, and I want them to experience all of that. And preferably the series goes a ways. I don't want them to get into a series and get swept. I'd like to see them in a six game series where they understand, like, the differences, because we always talk about how different playoff basketball is to the regular season. That's the kind of stuff, because then I think that's going to kind of feed the hunger for these guys to understand what it takes truly to take it to the next level. And from Rafael Stone's standpoint and Adoka and everybody with the organization, they also need to see and more clearly define, who do we have, what can they do, and what do we need that we desperately don't have, so that going forward then they can plan accordingly too. Because they have draft picks if they want to trade them or use them. They have pieces that they can use to get what they need if they can define what they need. And then they've got decisions to make on guys that are going into the third year, option years of their deals, like Brooks and Van Vliet and things like that. So I just want to get them to the point where we're not guessing as much anymore. And I think that a real legit playoff series can do a lot of that.
What is your expectation for the Rockets? Like, what is pass? What is failure? The rest of the way. 713-780-3776. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92. ESPN 92.5. What is always a passing grade for you is Monument Chevrolet. It's March. Spring is on the way. And that means it is time for spring savings at Monument Chevrolet. Get over to the dealership, 225 Beltway 8. Check out their massive inventory. I was over there the other day. They're so nice. So kind. It's not like those icky dealerships that you go to, you walk in, everybody's got like the slick back hair and you're kind of intimidated by everything. It's a friendly family type feel at Monument Chevrolet. They're the dealer that you can trust. Transparent, no hassle pricing, get your car shopping done fast. They also have employee pricing going on right now with their Silverado 1500s. Get what they pay. Can't beat that. Monument Chevrolet's been serving the Houston area for 50 years. They've helped generations of families get into new vehicles, and these families keep coming back because they trust the fine people at Monument Chevrolet. Like we mentioned, the family feel, friendly atmosphere. They hire good people, so the culture's fantastic. They don't hide charges like a lot of the other folks. folks, and they've been run by the Smith family, again, for the last 50 years. Get a fair deal, a fast, easy transaction without wasting your valuable time in those aggravating, stressful negotiations. We mentioned the employee pricing right now on the Silverado 1500s. If you're more of a pre-owned vehicle person, that's fine. Also, if you do that for Monument Chevrolet, how about a 6-month, 6,000-mile guarantee? Can't beat that. No tricks, no time wasting. You've been waiting to upgrade your ride. Now is the time to do it. Visit them online, monumentchevrolet.com, monumentchevrolet.com. But go visit them in person. You're not going to be sorry about it. 225 and Beltway 8, Monument Chevrolet. Chevrolet, together, let's drive.
ESPN 97.5. You found the killer bees live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios. Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Blank, Branham, bees, 713-780-3776. Texture, they got to figure out that zone defense been killing them. They don't have the shooting. One team did it in the copycat league. Texture, Pelicans aren't as bad as their record shows. They have Zion back, Zion. And they've been formidable as of late. He is a beast. He is a load. Although the Rockets did a pretty good job against him yesterday.
I was curious.
Gave them trouble.
After watching that, Jeremy, the fact that I was kind of piggybacking on what you said, though. I was watching Zion, and I'm going, he's very interesting if he's on the right team. Like, I don't think he's in the right setting, situation, or anything with New Orleans. But I think that as much as a lot of people have come, like, written him off for the rest of his career, he's a load, man, and he's athletic, and he's strong, and if he stays, and it's a big if, these are all ifs, right? If he stays in this kind of shape, he has enough basketball skill where he can dominate games, and I think that if he gets out of New Orleans, someone might catch the right Zion Williamson for several years.
Yeah, he's just so injury-prone.
It's a big risk, right? It's the injuries and the attitude, because all of a sudden it took this, like, however many lives he's had, all of a sudden he finds the motivation to, like, eat better and get in better shape and realize that's part of being a pro. And then you factor in the injuries and go, is the risk worth the reward?
Yeah. Yeah, I feel like the Pelicans are just going to live and die by Zion. I feel like they're committed to it. I feel like they're just going to keep him. One of the thoughts that I – because he looked a little chunky to me yesterday. One of the thoughts that I had is, like, I'm kind of looking forward – to Zion Williamson at, like, 33 when he just doesn't care about his weight anymore. And he's, like, 350, but he's still, like, scoring 25 a game. Kind of like the round mound of rebound whenever he was with Houston. Because, you know, at some point, Zion's just going to stop caring. Like, he's going to make all his money. He's going to be out of his prime years. He's going to be in his mid-30s. And he's going to go, you know what? I'm just gonna eat whatever I want to eat. He's going to balloon up. And then he's going to be, like, this, this like, really great version of Bonzi Wells late in his career.
We kind of saw that with Fat Sean Kemp at the end of his career.
Yeah.
Big Baby, right?
Big yeah, Baby well, kept big baby bigger,
but he still got his.
Yeah,
like, don't
big,
you
big
see
Baby
it?
Came into the league a
like,
little
when he's, thick. When he's 34 years old, he's going to be like, screw it. Like, I'm late in my career. I don't care. And somebody's still going to pay him good money, like on a one-year deal. And he's going to go out there and get 25 and 12 every night with his big, massive, huge body.
I think he kind of did it coming into the league. Yeah. He kind of reversed the timetable. He said, screw it when he came into the league and still was getting the numbers, and then he just couldn't stay healthy. But that's what I think when we talk about Jalen and untapped the potential that he still has. There's so much untapped potential with Zion, and you just don't know if he's ever going to get it for other reasons. For the fact that he doesn't stay healthy, he doesn't take great care of himself, he can balloon in a heartbeat. And I think that smaller market situation with New Orleans, they've tried multiple different ways to put a whole team around him, and now they spend a boatload of money on veterans that not only can't stay healthy, but they look like they're washed. And now because their big centerpiece isn't living up to, you know, complete billing, doing his part, New Orleans is in the tank, and they might be there for a long time.
Yeah, they've I mean, it's going to be if Zion can stay healthy or not. Todd, I refuse to believe that he can stay healthy. I'm kind of there too. Jetter says he had a big, massive body already and stayed injured. No, I don't think that it's going to be the recipe for him to find health. I just think at the age of 35, he's still going to be good enough to play in the league, and he's also going to weigh 350 pounds doing it, and it's going to be a lot of fun to watch. It's going to be like Pig Miller all over again. Branham really knows how to come in and bring down the mood. Yeah, baby, it's a Friday. Rockets desperately need outside shooters. They have none. Yeah, I mean, Reed's fine. Or you know what? Reed's not fine. Reed Sheppard has not been a good outside shooter this year. He has the potential to be a good outside shooter. We think he will be a good outside shooter, but he's not currently a good outside shooter. Dylan Brooks is, but Dylan Brooks is probably shooting at career highs. Mm-hmm. And Jabari's not bad. Jabari's fine.
Yeah, look, overall, I don't think this team has shooters. I don't think that they have the kind of shooters that a lot of teams that, you know, are solid playoff teams that make long runs have had and have a need. And we said going into the season, they needed shooting. They thought they addressed that by getting the best three-point shooter in the country last year. He just hasn't shot the ball well, and he hasn't got all that many opportunities either. But even when he does, he doesn't shoot the ball well.
Yeah.
And it can't be left on just one guy's shoulders either. They need everybody to shoot the ball better. And you're right, you're getting some career-type years, which if you had a couple other shooters you could capitalize on. But I still think that in numbers, they need more shooters.
When Jock Landale's your second-best three-point shooter, you got issues. And when Dylan Brooks is your best three-point shooter, you have issues. And Dylan shot it well. He shot it well. He's under 40%, though. 387. He was. And the reason I say he's under 40% is because he was above 40% for a while. Jock, 375. Tari's 369. I like Tari's game. Holiday, 368. Jalen 356, Jabari 343. I'll take back what I said about Jabari. Like, that's pretty average. Van Vliet's 340, Cam Whitmore 329, Jayshon Tate 294, Reed Sheppard 279, and Min 260, which is up. He was like at 12. That's not good three-point shooting. There's no doubt about that. Goodness forbid we want the scorer to score the basketball. He's not out there for assist. What did you think about that play where Michael Jordan hit Steve Kerr for that game-winning shot? You make the right play. Like, I want the basketball player on my team to make the right play. Sometimes the right play is not shooting. Now, scoring is always the right play. But the passing the ball sometimes is the right play.
Oh, there's no doubt about it. I also think that, like, you having a feel for the game, right? I mean, you have a feel for the game and know there are nights you got it going on and you just know that, hey, I'm going to probably look for my shot every time down the floor, and I don't think anybody's going to argue with you when you got it going. But you also realize, like, time and score matter, situation matters, and you know, what your team, the team around you matters. And if you know and trust your teammates, which you should, especially if you're having an off night, to your point, at least kudos to Jalen and others for when it was, hey, I got a good shot here, but I can get a better shot if I make one more pass, especially in the third quarter and when they were capitalizing by getting out in transition. They were making better decisions.
Yeah. Jalen had one of his best games yesterday, says a texter, sitting Jalen the whole fourth quarter. Got within 6 points. Udoka's tripping. They will win a playoff series if they play Memphis. I like Udoka, just don't agree with everything he does. Udoka doesn't play the right players together. It's because Fred VanVleet isn't there, period.
So, I don't put that on Fred VanVleet. I don't think at this point in his career anybody should put that on Fred VanVleet. Could he help if he was out there? Yes. Is he the savior? No.
Yeah, I think he's a stabilizer.
Yeah,
like, to me, that's the best way to phrase it. Like, I don't think he'd be the difference of, you know, the Rockets going from, like, playing at a 7 or 8 to currently playing, like, at a 3 or a 4. Like, he's not the gap there. He's just the kind of guy who levels them. Maybe he's the floor. Like, he doesn't let them get to the 3 or 4. When they're in a lull, they're at a 5 and a 6 instead of this 3 and a 4. But, yeah, Xavier's too strong. 713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line. Texans made a move today. Shaq Mason. No longer a Texan. If I had to tell you, you have to pick a starting five offensive line with what's currently under contract, what does that offensive line look like? And what are those key questions for the Texans offensive line? 713-780-3776. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5. In with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Texans, according to reports, will be releasing Shaq Mason. Came out early today. I think Aaron Wilson was the first one to report it. Then Jordan Schultz jumped on over it. And then you have all those Texans aggregators. They were like, hey, this is happening. Thank you, man. So the Texans are getting rid of him. Right whenever the news came out, it didn't say like it would be a post-June 1st cut, which kind of worried me because cutting him pre-June 1st only saves him like $2.1 million or whatever. And then cutting him post-June 1st, giving that designation, now puts it like north of $7 million. But then it came out later. John Alexander, also Aaron Wilson, reported that it is going to be a post-June 1st cut. The different, actually, it was 2.1 in savings if they did it before June 1st. It's 9.4 if they do it post June 1st, so 7.3. The problem doing it post June 1st is you can't use that money until after June, but that's going to be basically like what your rookie class signs for, so you can kind of earmark that money for the rookie class. So it all works out. So I was happy about that, and not really a surprise. Like I this would have been the one guy that I would have predicted if the Texans used their one post-June 1st cut, it would have been on Shaq Mason for me. So I was happy to see Nick Caserio do it because he thinks like me.
Well, I thought they, I thought they were going to get rid of him. I think the other question is still Kenyon Green in terms of when we had the conversation of like the one guy you would eliminate off the line. Shaq was awful at the for the majority of last year, but it seemed like the move that we all wanted them to make. So I'm glad that they have done that. The, you know, the interesting thing then is now, you know, what else are they going to do? They restructured one deal in Nico. They get rid of Shaq. How else are they going to try and recoup as much as they can to try and be an aggressive, be as aggressive as Nick may want to be in this offseason? Because I think that maybe you look at Danielle Hunter, you look at some of the guys with bigger deals and look at who else can I renegotiate a little bit with and get creative with so that I can get more cap space so that I might have more freedom to kind of make some of the moves we think that they need to make. And we've said all along the number one point that has to be addressed is offensive line.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe I've read that Danielle Hunter might want an extension, so maybe you can extend him but then bring down his AAV, try to make that a lower number. Kenyon Green to me is a lock to be on the Houston Texans, though. Like, I don't – that's not cost-saving at all. You save less than $1 million if you get rid of Kenyon Green. He's a first-rounder, so, like, I think his job's probably safe. Like, I don't think anybody's trading for Kenyon Green. I think you can pretty much lock in Kenyon Green as one of your backup offensive linemen for the 2025 season.
And we were talking about earlier in terms of if you could eliminate one guy, but you're right. He's going to be on the roster, and I don't think he's going to start, and I don't think he should start. And you know, we've heard it all before in terms of all the things that he did to kind of jumpstart his career, and they haven't worked. And so if he's going to earn it now, he's going to earn it from a backup position where if the, you know, the opportunity presents itself, he has a chance to step up. But I think that they are going to do exactly what you said. He'll be on the roster. But in terms of their starting offensive line, that they will address that in a, maybe one, if not a variety of ways, because this offensive line has to be better.
Yeah. The if you had to come up with a starting offensive line right now, starting five offensive linemen, you know, your tackles, your guards, your centers, center, you can only have one of those. Mm-hmm. What would it be with guys that are currently under contract?
It's tough because right guard now to me is the biggest question mark. I think that if you look at just putting your five best offensive linemen out there, I think obviously Laremy starts at left tackle. I think that Howard is your left guard. I think that Patterson's probably your center. I think that Fisher is your right tackle. And then for me, I guess Juice Scruggs is your right guard?
Yeah, that's my five, too. Like, I'm not even sure that you could really argue for anybody else unless you wanted to argue for Kenyon Green because of potential and new coaching staff's going to get the most out of him. But that would be my starting five. I guess the other question, that the Kenyon Green issue is a question. Like, you know, will he be coached up to be better than any of those guys? So, like, that is a question, but it's not my first question. I think the first question of this offensive line that Caserio and Kaylee and Popovich that they have to decide on, and I think that they need to do this sooner rather than later, is what position is Tytus Howard going to play? Is he going to be a left guard? Is he going to be a right tackle? And then that also adds to the follow-up question, is Blake Fisher good enough to be your right tackle? Mm-hmm. So, like, that's why that – I think that that question needs to be answered now. I don't think that you can be going into free agency. I don't think you could be on the clock at number 25 or wherever they end up and still be wondering, is Tytus Howard going to be a left guard or right tackle? I know that it creates some versatility there based on like where you're drafting and all that stuff, but I think it's important to answer that question now. And I also think it's important to answer that question because you know you talked about the cap space and all that stuff. I think if you're committed to making Tytus Howard a left guard, I think you go to Tytus Howard and you're like, hey, man, like, you're making too much money to be a left guard in the NFL. we're willing to work with you here. We're still going to pay you more than what your market would be if you were just a free agent, but you need to come down a little bit, a few million from where that contract is at. It wouldn't shock me if Nick Caserio tries to do that with Titus Howard.
Yeah, maybe it is, like you said, maybe it is a chance for him to add some years to the deal, but at a far more reasonable rate for the position that he plays and the performance that he's put out there. And maybe that they can have some kind of meet me in the middle situation. It seems like he likes it here if he wants to stay here. But, you know, we've also seen with his Twitter account that he is a right tackle. So
he got rid of that.
I know he eventually got rid of it.
I understand. So is he open to left guard now because he removed that from his Twitter bio?
I just need to know, like, you know, what's his thinking? Is his thinking, I'm hell-bent, I'm going to be a tackle in this league, whether it be for financial reasons or otherwise or just your ego. But if he's willing to play left guard, then Nick should be willing to say, hey, we'll add a couple years if we can do it at a reasonable price and restructure the entire deal so that the team benefits, and then see if we can find some way to get find a happy medium. Because I hope that's the case.
Yeah, look, I mean, it's probably going to be a tough thing for Titus to swallow. Like, he's probably not crazy about the idea. I think he's still deactivated Twitter, too. Like, I can't find him on Twitter. I was going to see what his bio read right now. I think he's remember, he jumped off of Twitter like halfway through last year. 2 years ago, he was popping off to Branham.
Like, so say you forced him off?
Yeah. No, I wasn't the one that forced him off because I did that 2 years ago. I even forgot what that was about. Was that whenever I was talking about Laramie not helping him up, or was it something else? Did Titus come to his defense? I think Titus came to his defense.
I think that was exactly what it was.
Yeah, which is kind of nice, I guess. I can appreciate Titus coming to Laramie's defense as opposed to Laramie not helping up his quarterback after he gives up a sack. What are you doing? Ocho, is it feasible for the Texans to also acquire Evan Engram and Ronald Darby for pennies since Jags just released them? I can argue that every player the Jags release is an upgrade over everyone on the Texans roster outside of Nico and Stingley. I think you're going a little too far there. Evan Engram intrigues me as a receiving tight end. I don't think that the Houston Texans tight end room is going to look much different. Dalton Schultz, like, it doesn't save you any money if you get rid of him. You have Cade Stover on a rookie deal. You extended Brevin Jordan last season. Most teams carry like a fourth tight end, but, you know, it's usually like not a guy who's not very good. It's like the Quentin Tarantinos of the world. So is Dalton Schultz going to be your two, Brevin Jordan and Cade Stover your three and your four? Like, I have a hard time seeing the scenario where the Houston Texans add a starting caliber tight end.
I thought about it because when I first heard the news and then driving home, I was like, boy, he would be fantastic in this offense, but he can't really block. You mentioned it. They have Jordan coming back, and they signed him, so you're going to find a home for him. And I just feel like, yeah, we all know that the return on investment hasn't been great so far with your starting tight end, but I don't think he's going anywhere. And so I don't think that they had the flexibility, even if they wanted to go out and try and get him and add him to your team, even if he would be a help.
Yeah, I feel like that's just not a match. I do like the player, but I don't feel like it's a match between the Texans and the Jags. Brian, did you have a different starting O-line than Blankers and I?
No, I think because of what you guys mentioned of who's behind the five guys you mentioned, it's a no-brainer. I mean, whether it be Kenyon Green, Kendrick Green, or Bron Breakker, or whatever the hell that guy's name is, Nick Broeker, there's no one behind the five. So I think it's going to be, unless they draft somebody or make a trade for someone that's not going to add a lot to their cap, it's going to be Tunzel, Titus, Jarrett Patterson, Juice, and Blake Fisher.
Yeah. Now, I do think that they're going to – so of those guys that we have in our start, the Killer Bee starting five offensive linemen really wreak havoc and scare the opponents, how many of those guys do you think will be replaced by opening day?
Two.
Okay.
I'm thinking one.
I'm going one.
I think it's Juice.
The question ultimately comes down to Titus Howard. If Titus Howard is your right tackle, I think it's two. If Titus Howard is your left guard, I think it's one. I actually think it's going to be center. I think it's going to be a center.
I think they're going to get a center, and then I think that they're going to try and get a veteran right guard.
Yeah, I wouldn't – I mean, I obviously wouldn't be opposed to that. Just kind of my guess on what they do, which is fascinating. Offseason fast. I love the hot stove year. Legal tampering, by the way, gets started on Monday. You can legally tamper in the – which, what the heck is that? Like, why don't you just say free agency opens?
In sports.
Yeah. Yeah, just open it. But don't let them legally tamper.
If the tampering is legal, then it's not tampering. it's just negotiating.
You know what it really shows? It shows that, like, you had teams illegally
exactly
tampering,
right.
And then the NFL was like, well, you know, we don't really want to enforce it, so let's just make it legal. It's still tampering, but now it's legal.
Yeah, let's
figured it out.
Let's just try and get the egg off of our face by at least admitting that what's been going on has been going on for a long time. We'll just now say it's okay to do that.
Yeah. All right, 713-780-ESPN. Mark Berman, Houston legend, bussing with Berman next. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN
92.5. ESPN 97.5. When you're overwhelmed with tax debt...
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.